Last Thursday, the Environmental Protection Agency announced a long-awaited rule which attempts to address the growing crisis of lead-contaminated drinking water in communities across the country. The rule, while welcomed as a step in the right direction, now enters a 60-day comment period, but there are concerns that this proposed solution doesn't go far enough to address the enormity of the problem. Here to explain more is Krista Kelleher, a hydrologist and assistant professor of earth sciences and engineering at Syracuse University. Krista, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me here today.
So, basic question, what is this rule attempting to do?
Oh, man. So, it's attempting to do a lot of things, which tends to be, I think, what happens with this lead and copper rule. The two things that I think I'm most excited about, it's really trying to increase sampling reliability. We know that there is a history of some water utilities potentially trying to cheat and not take samples that will reveal the correct levels of lead. And it's also trying to protect children in schools. So it's making a big commitment to trying to increase sampling in places that we know that children are going to be, as they're at the most risk for issues with lead.
So when we think, again, thinking about lead in the water, at least the way I think a lot of folks understand it, is that it's a pretty local issue, right? Is this rule attempting to provide some sort of federal oversight to an issue that so far feels very local?
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it. I mean, so I think in terms of the local piece, we recognize that a lot of individuals don't have access to the information they need to assess their risk for lead. So I think in this rule is specifying not only, you know, are you in a place where you might be at risk of lead because you have a lead service line, something leading directly into your home, that if there is ineffective treatment from your water source, could potentially be leaching lead into your faucets. The other piece of it that I think makes it very much local is they're increasing the time from what was formerly 30 days to now 24 hours to notify homeowners if that lead action level of 15 parts per billion is exceeded.
So what happens if a municipality finds out that there is lead in the water? As you said, maybe there's an issue with the actual processing of water or there are pipes, as in the case of Newark and Flint, Michigan, that require replacing. And as in the case of both of these municipalities, the money is hard to come by. So what happens then? Does this indicate that the federal government might take a role in helping to provide funds to manage the lead if it's found in the water?
Yeah, so this is part of it. Part of it is that really initiates a set of steps that the water utility needs to take to make sure that they are trying to optimize how they treat their water. So if you exceed that level in 10% of your samples, so they're sampling based on the number of people that they're serving, if they exceed that level in 10% of their samples, then the water utility has a bunch of things that they need to do. And one of those things is public education. So it's making sure that individuals know what are the ways that they can avoid lead risk in their homes. The other thing that happens is it requires that they need to make a plan for replacing lead service lines. And so formerly this requirement was a replacement of about 7% per year, and now that is changing to 3% per year, which is a criticism that a lot of folks have had of this new proposed rule. And I will remind everyone, we have 60 days to comment. So scientists, public, please make some comments about this. But the funding is, of course, the big part. So we need funding for states to make sure that they're able to actually enforce these regulations. We need money to make sure that we can get those lead service lines out of the ground. And there is money via a lot of different federal entities that are doled out to the states. There are three new authorized grant programs under the Water Infrastructure Improvements for the Nation Act. There's also the Drinking Water State Revolving Fund. But, I mean, I'll be honest. So Syracuse applied for one of these, received some money to replace lead service lines, Syracuse, where I am here. It covered replacing about 1% or removing about 1% of their lead service lines. So it's a drop in the bucket a lot of times, which is unfortunate.
We did reach out to the EPA for comment, and This is what the EPA had to say about criticism that it's not doing enough on the ground. And they said, quote, press reports that claim EPA's new proposal would require fewer lead service line replacements are simply not true. And they went on to explain that weaknesses in the old rule made these differences in percentages inconsequential. They also told us that replacing 3% of service lines annually was something sustainable that cities could not opt out of. What's your reaction to that?
I mean, I'm hesitant to say I agree, but to some extent I do agree. I think there's reading this rule and even just reading, you know, this updated set of regulations that they're proposing, it's over 300 pages long. Like, I'm trying to envision it like a choose your own adventure book, more or less, right? There are so many ways that they could count a replacement of a lead service line before this rule. This rule, I think, is in a lot of ways trying to close some of the loopholes. So one of those is a partial service line replacement. What makes this removal of lead service lines so complicated is that part of it is owned by the utility and part of it is owned by the homeowner. And so part of this new rule, the part that I think I'm enthusiastic about, is that they are requiring that if a homeowner removes the lead service line leading to their house, that means the utility needs to replace their portion of the lead service line. And I think some of those communication gaps and expectations, trying to close the loop on those, will really assist with removing more lead service lines. That said, I mean, we need to get the lead service lines out of the ground. That is the bottom line.
And that's, again, that's something that seems to, I keep, you know, mentioning Flint, Michigan, and Newark, New Jersey, because those are high profile cases. There are also cases that take place in predominantly Black communities and low income communities. And I'm wondering, at what point do you see the United States having lead-free service lines or not having to worry about this risk of lead-contaminated water, particularly in our low-income communities here?
I mean, that is the million-dollar question. And I think that that is something that we really need to press the state and federal governments and, to some extent, the EPA to really think about. I don't think we're asking that question. You're asking that question. Why aren't scientists asking that question? Why aren't regulators asking that question? I would hope in the next 30 years we would really be able to make a dent, but that sounds so disappointing when we put it at basically like adding another couple of decades. That's a whole nother generation of children that will be exposed to this risk. It needs to be sooner.
Well, we will continue to ask the question. Krista Kelleher is a hydrologist and an assistant professor of earth sciences and engineering at Syracuse University. Krista, thank you.
Thank you so much.